thought if you could just talk about, you know, how the Women's Studies program originated. I mean, I know a little bit about it, but if you could just kind of tell your story,
okay.
And then maybe I'll ask a few questions as they occur to me.
If it's okay, I'm going to back up a Nicholsworth, because it really came out of, on this campus, it came out of the Caucus on Women's Rights at SUNY, which has its own story and history, and it's been interesting. But we took on, we being about four of us, took on an enormous number of projects. I mean, we had such energy at that time. This is now, we're talking about 1970. And one of the things we set up was a committee, and called Women's Studies. I mean, it was one of maybe 12 or 15 committees that we set up. And I was still, I think, chairing the caucus, though Francine came along pretty soon and I handed it all over to her very quickly. It was sort of in the air around the country because San Francisco, I believe, already had started a program. And so there was beginning to be, and I was, at that time when I was chairing the caucus, I was just sending for materials on anything and everything. And every conference I went to, I picked up materials on everything. And so that was how I got on thinking about it. But this committee was formed, and it was, I'm sure you're the only one who's going to hear this tape, okay?
Well, let's turn it off for a moment.
Yeah.
So there was a committee that was formed, and there were four women on it, including Judy Federley, whose first year it was at SUNY, and June Honor, and Sylvia Barnard, and a woman whose name I can't any longer remember. And if you want it, Judy Federley will know, will remember who that was. But they came up with some plans for a Women's Studies program. And, of course, at that time, Ruth Schmidt was the humanities dean, and she was already a feminist by that time and was sympathetic to this whole. Well, I don't know if she was sympathetic to women's studies at that time, but certainly sympathetic and has been involved in the caucus stuff. And so the decision to try to house the program in humanities was really based on her being dean, and we thought maybe she would give us a little more quick attention, you know. So that was how it came to be in humanities, since in fact it's always, well, it's funny, at SUNY, it's all almost always up until, well, maybe a decade ago now, but it was very early, it was always a lot of people in humanities, in English, for example, were many of the early people, so that it makes sense to be in humanities, but in a lot of other places, of course, it's in social science, because there are often many more people in social sciences involved, but here it was that confluence of events that were both committed. Many women from humanities and a sympathetic dean, which we did not have in social sciences. So I don't actually know, or I don't remember, I'm sure at the time I knew, but I don't remember how the, if anybody wants to know all the administrative junk, I don't know all that stuff about how it got to be a program, but it did, and it did it very quickly, actually. That was one of the things. I think they just drew up some rough guidelines, which we passed on to Ruth, and since Ruth was a sympathetic dean, she went to a very unsympathetic vice president and president, but managed to get a program. And I think the reason she got it was that we didn't ask for any funding, we didn't ask for any lines. All we needed at that time, we needed everything, but what we were asking for was release time for somebody to direct the program, and then some cooperation from departments in giving people release time to do some of these courses. And at that time, English was, and so that's how Ruth managed, I think, to make the case for it to what were not particularly sympathetic higher administration people. And June Honor, I think, was director of it for a semester, but it really didn't go anywhere. She just, I don't even know what they exactly did at that time, but simultaneous to that starting of the program, and all, Judy Federley had been at a we had both been at a conference where, but Judy got terribly interested in the University at Buffalo's Women's Studies first course, and it was very like well, let's put it this way, our intro to feminism, 210, is very much based on the model that they talked about at this first conference we went to, which I may very well have been one of those caucus conferences, because we were still having a number of those at that time. So Judy started, introduced a course called Introduction to Feminism, and managed to do it to get release time from English. Now, at that time, English had like 47 or 48 full-time faculty members. So, and again, a sympathetic, what do they call, administrative assistant, Ann Weinberg. And Ann did most of the program, the scheduling and all, and simply, I'm sure she had that. Connect with the chair about it, but managed to make it be possible that Judy could have release time to do this. And I sat in on the course the whole time. And following that course, again with some version of the Buffalo program in mind, we set up that collective that would then be the group that would go on and teach the next time round or do that kind of station. So those two things were happening at once. So women's studies, I think, got a very good head start, a lot through Judy's efforts, because if she had pushed for that and made it happen, and then I went along with it in the sense of I was kind of a fellow traveler at that time. She had it on her schedule. I sat in on the course. I couldn't shut up, so I was a participant. And then the second semester, we both did it. We did the collective over and above our regular, at that time, 12-hour teaching load.
Wow, yeah.
And we met many, many hours, I can tell you, those first times. It was very, as I've said about other things, it was a very heady time, and so, you know, you didn't mind, and they were very good students at first group. So that's how we got going. And I'm going to stop now and ask, see if you want to ask any more questions, because I've moved into a very specific area, if you want to see.
Well, I guess what I'd like to do is talk about a chronology. What about the arrangement that was made later on, where we hired somebody in, and what the arrangement was to keep them as director for 3 years, and then they
right.
go into a department.
Right. Right.
How did that develop? And
okay, why not do that in a minute? Okay, so the whole program started in either 74 or 75, and again, I'm real bad on stuff, so you might want to check that one out and see when exactly it was. But ISER, then after June Hanna was acting director for a semester, Ruth managed to get me release time. Not much. I think I had one course off to be director of women's studies. And at that time, there was so much work to do, and that I felt like I was just scattershot, you know, every place. But I did it for 4 years, but I really burned out doing it, because I did some things well, but I felt as one of the things we did very well at that time, which now would not be as necessary, it's fun, but it wouldn't be as necessary, but was then, because it generated a lot of interest and all, was we did a lot of programming. We had Ogden Rich, we had Elaine Showalter, we had, who's the one who heads up? Oh, damn. MacArthur, she's on the...
Kate Stimson.
Kate Stimson, we had Ogden Rich, did I say Alice Walker?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had all these people, and Marge Piercy, we had all these people for programs and overnights and stuff. So we had a lot of interest generated that way. That was, I suppose... I mean, it wasn't as though we all sat down and said, now, what's the best way to get our program noticed and on its feet? But it kind of just came to me that would be a way of getting some people involved. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just one of the things. So that, a lot of energy and all went into that. And I've forgotten now what other programs. I got Francine interested in a course, in her own course, through the second course, really, or second set of courses we developed, which was that one that's now called that's called Perspectives on Women, and that was taught the first summer by Gloria DeSole, actually, who by that time had left SUNY and probably was already at Skidmore by this time, and she did it a little differently from a little bit later. I took it over, and had that series of people come in and mm-hmm. talk about the ways in which women were, I don't mean women faculty or students were treated, but the way that, that women were treated within the disciplines and all. So that happened that second summer, I believe. I suppose I have to say, I developed the course, though Gloria's working it out during summer school. She did it with a kind of way of testing out these ideas that were kind of floating around. So we did that. So that those were the two initial courses in the program that gave us a kind of foundation. And I don't remember any other departments being particularly willing and happy to let us take their faculty, but we must have been doing some things right because people were beginning to offer courses that could be used, cross-listed and stuff. And then after 4 years, well, during that, sometime during that last year, I was still getting materials from everywhere, including brochures from Indiana University, which had a women's studies program. And it was in one of those brochures that I read their plan for increasing, for getting a chair and increasing their size of their faculty, which was the one that we used almost exactly the same way, which was to hire somebody in who was in a field that was in discipline we needed, but also would be somebody who would be accepted by a department for their, to go into their department. So they would come in, and Chris Bowes was, of course, the first one we hired, and she had been to be approved by the whole sociology department. And I have to say sociology that time, I don't remember who was chair, but they were very cooperative. Mm-hmm. History was totally uncooperative, and a couple other departments were like, who needs it and all, because at that time we weren't under the kind of, right now anybody would probably take a freebie that way, you know.
Right.
But at that time they didn't need to. So sociology was very cooperative with us about that. So that was the way we managed to get Chris. And again, I think Ruth was still around, and I think she worked with the vice president to make sure that he would accept this. And up to this point, we really hadn't asked for very much at all. We were really, by this time we had a part-time secretary and all, but we didn't have much resources at all. So we hadn't asked for much, so I suppose that they could throw us that little bone, really, and not be upset about it. So that's how we started that model. And then, of course, Iris was the next person who came in under that model. But by that time, Judith Romeli came along as vice president, and it's my, and this is my idea, she never said this to me, but I think she got onto the fact that if we did this 3 years, and 15 years, we'd have five people out there, you know, that we'd be increasing all the time, and in a couple of decades, we'd have a lot, a pretty good-sized faculty. So that she was the one who came up with the idea of, now other people you might talk to might have a different, you know, slant on this on this thing. They might think that Judith Romeli was really being a supporter. Mm-hmm. But in any case, she was the one who said we could have a full-time tenure director. Mm-hmm. And that's what the year that we hired Bonnie Spanier as director. And that was a big, interesting search. And hoping you were here by that time, mm-hmm. weren't you?
Yeah,
so you know all the details of how. I thought that was a wonderful feminist process that we went through that time, because we really, by that time we were sort of mature enough program to know that we had certain needs. We were not doing it all by the seat of our pants by then. We were beginning to think through what areas
well,
you needed people.
Well, it was almost 10 years.
Yeah, yeah, well, but still, when you have no resources, you're doing everything by the seat of your pants pretty much. So now, you know.
Who was involved? I came along about 1980,
mm-hmm.
but we want to get this down for posterity anyway. So who else was involved? There was you and Francine and Judy and Jean Connor and Gloria, although she was
she wasn't involved at all when she wasn't here.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know her year of returning.
Yeah.
So she, I would say Gloria's always been a supporter, but never an active person in the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Who else would be? You know, it was always very small in those first days.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose at some point along the way I would add Judy Barlow to the list of people who were active, and of course Chris and Iris by this time.
Yeah.
And, oh, I just thought something. There's no one, when Roberta Bernstein got on the faculty, she got involved right away.
Yeah.
Glenna, I don't know what year Glenna came, but yeah, I think Glenna, I don't know how people like you found out about it. I know in the fall, every fall we would have some kind of reception for people so that we tried to find the new people. And then Gloria, of course, translated that reception that Women's Studies had for new faculty women into that larger reception for new faculty women, which has now been destroyed by making it for all faculty. So anyway, but that was how we met some people and got them interested. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that's how you found us or if there was some other way. You know who was a wonderful recruiter at that time, both in terms of women's studies on campus and the caucus, Capital District women's thing was Ann Roberts. And of course, for a while there, and I don't know the intersecting dates here, but for a while there, Sandra Harding was here because she was in the Allen Center.
We didn't realize she was here.
Yeah, and she was a big recruiter for Capital District women, especially.
Yeah.
So now, I don't know that Sandra was ever. She may have just been on the way leaving around that time because she was only here a few years in the mid-70s before they got rid of the Allen Center. But Sandra certainly did some recruiting for Capital District. You see, one of the things is that these things so overlap, such overlapping people. Mm-hmm. And to some extent, Diva Daines was involved at that time.
She taught one of the first courses.
She did. She and I taught actually the first team talk for women in literature course in 70. That was
so
before the program.
Oh, that was before the program.
That was before. That was just a, you know. Diva was pretty active in getting everything going. Because she knew the woman who was head of general studies at that time. And somewhere they met and were talking. And so it got sponsored by general studies. And then after we had done the course, then we went to the chair, who was Walter Knox, who at first, 6'5", poo-pooed the idea of a course in it, but we hammered away a little bit and we finally let it be part of our program. So it was a very early course. I don't know, again, I don't know if that was in the schedule. It was probably after the Women's Studies program had started, but not. That was pretty connected in terms of time. All that was going on all at once, you know.
So do you remember, so we had those three courses. And then what happened? Do you remember? I mean, you were still director at that time.
Yeah, and if I had my materials, I could look back. But Sylvia Barnard taught women in classical antiquity. Jeez, it feels like there were, we did have some courses. Oh, there were women here who are no longer here, you know, who taught, or the woman I mentioned in sociology, whose name I can't come up with, did some kind of women in sociology or some version of that. I don't know if Ann Sutherland Harris, who was in the art history department here, did a whole course, but she participated in the course that Prospectus on Women course. She was also, I don't think she was very active supporter, she really lived in New York and came up, you know, but she was a supporter, you know, so she was around. And what other courses did we have? There was somebody taught a course in Women in the Law or Women in Criminal Justice, some area like that for a while.
How did racism, classism, sexism develop?
You know,
that's been such an important course for us.
I was in on it, and I can't remember who the other people were, where this came from. It's just like it's blank. Because I was thinking, I know that was, and it came in very early in the program. And I'm sure Judy and I and the people who were involved must have been involved in thinking through this.
Sure.
But I can't remember who exactly that was. That's where you're going to have to go to the next person down the road.
Right.
And maybe Judy is a good person to talk to. She's got much better memory than I have, too.
Oh, she's on my list.
So she revises history. Got to know that. And she can hear that, too, if she wants to. You know, so you got to be careful. But she does have a very good memory as well. So she might know that. And Francine might know, too, because You know, I wish I had a kind of little film of who the people were who were here, because I think I've lost some of the people who were here. Some of them, of course, didn't stay.
Yeah.
Would teach a course, and then they would be gone somewhere. It seems as though there was a woman in anthropology as well who taught a course for a while, women in anthropology. So we had a few people in the social sciences.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, somebody in criminal justice who taught either women in the law or something about women in the criminal justice system for a while. So that's how those courses got developed, and then we prevailed on some people to teach them, you know, who came later. Like, I don't know this woman in criminal justice who's legally blind. She taught women in the law
Sally
for a while.
Yes. Friedman?
Yes, she taught. Mm-hmm. And I know that we were always trying, every summer, we had enough courses, in the sense that the only three core courses, of course, were the ones that I've mentioned and we've talked about, in the department or in the program itself. But we had enough courses in social science and all to feel comfortable about that, except in psychology, we never were willing. So every summer we would try to get a little bit of money to hire somebody as an adjunct to come in and teach it in the summer, so that we had that course on the program in the summer. And you know, every once in a while somebody would pop up and teach something like women in religion or something, you know, so we'd have an occasional course like that. So we managed, I think, within the first, two, three years, to get 10 or a dozen courses every semester that could be used. And again, some of them were people in English, the women in literature, and then I taught the first course, and we had in our English department requirements a single author course and a two authors, comparative authors courses, and I taught the first, I taught Virginia Woolf, that was the first time a woman had been taught, and that course was cross-sisters, and then I taught Woolf and Lessing, so that was also cross-sisters, so that's the way we built a little bit, and then along came, you know, Judy Johnson and did, well, first, Judy Barlow did women playwrights, and then Judy Johnson did women poets, and you know, so we just kept building outward that way and in the department in courses that were welcomed into the department.
When did we first begin to offer a minor?
Very early, because at that time, I don't know what the situation of minors is now, but at that time, students could create their own minors. So what we did is just publicize that if they took these courses, or that they could create a minor in women's studies. So I don't know the exact time, but I think that was very early on, because that was not a problem.
Right, and then we began doing majors.
The way we did majors initially was with one of those student initiated, but you know, that was after the early 70s, all the uproar and the students insisting on building their own curricula and all that stuff. We had. I don't know if it's still in the books that students can do a student initiated major and you can do a faculty initiated major. But I think the very first ones were student initiated, which meant that they pulled together a series of courses, got me, if I was at that time the director, and got somebody else to help them, be kind of a mentor about it, and pulled it together. But very soon we put together a faculty initiated major. And again, I'm sorry, I don't know the dates on this, but I'd say within, certainly during my tenure as director of the program, that all happened. So we had a faculty initiated major so that they could, because some of the first women's studies majors were fairly early on. You know, I think someone like Ellen Mindell, she must have graduated in about 78, somewhere on there.
Yeah,
so early. So.
I remember Margaret
Clemens. Right. Yeah.
She graduated. She graduated in 81.
Mm-hmm.
She was there the first
year. Yeah. So that's the way we did it. And of course, the idea of getting a major, the idea about, we actually had some qualms about turning ourselves into a department. And you probably were in on some of the discussions.
But talk about it.
because you were here by that time.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that the whole question of whether we would begin to be scrutinized too sharply was always a question there, whether that we would be deemed, you know. In other words, the whole question about if you go for a major and you don't succeed, then you've gotten a lot of attention that turns into negative attention.
Right.
And since we had never been given resources, we weren't anticipating we were going to suddenly get all kinds of resources. We'd always had people in the library, though, who were supportive and, I think, did some purchasing that was very helpful to us, and bibliographers who were supportive, mm-hmm. so that we had a reasonable collection. So
yeah.
That was not the library collection, which wouldn't have been an issue, but we didn't have much of a core faculty, so the question of how you translate into a department when
right.
you've got nobody who's core faculty was a difficult one. So I think the politics of that and kind of the fear that you know, that course, that Introduction to Feminism and the Teaching Collective, I had to check that out in about its second year to make sure it was okay, because we were having students running the course, and so we had to find out from downtown what the obligations of faculty were to that course, so that we wouldn't run afoul of you know, our own administration saying, what the hell are you doing having students teaching courses? And you know, so we took care of all that. At the same time, there was some nervousness that some of the enemies, like Malcolm Sherman and all, they got on to that we had this program, which was an extremely good one, as I think you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's
sure.
been a really,
oh, yeah.
really good program and all, but we were a little afraid of getting too much public scrutiny, and we didn't know whether we could slip in without it, or if it would only raise the question of resources, and then we'd be defeated on it. So
yeah.
I think that remained an issue. I don't know how many years, but I'd say a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't constant debate or anything, but it was sort of up in the air about whether we should go ahead and try or not try. And I don't think if my memory is correct, it was not until Bonnie was the chair that we changed
that's right.
over, was
right.
it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the whole thing, just sort of. And then I think that it kind of just sat for a while during some of those years and didn't get any attention at all.
I think it was when. I'll have to check. I mean, I'm going to talk to Bonnie, too.
Mm-hmm.
I think it might have been when we began to get a top appointment, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Because we needed to have more than a critical mass of one.
Yeah,
that
right.
That was a concern.
Yeah, I didn't get that.
Yeah.
Sure. So, but I think that certainly the idea got passed along during Christmas time, and I don't know how much work she did on it, but I don't think I was very much at all with it. So I think it just had a lull period there, you know. But when it finally came about, it seemed that it went over without any. Maybe Bonnie will say different, but I don't remember there being any objections or anything around it. Whereas in the first years, you know, when I would go to meet those curriculum committees of the college with some new course that we were trying to initiate, I mean, it was always an ugly scene. And in fact, I just so remember this, I don't remember the guy's name, and he's not around here anymore, but guy in of all the fields for this to happen, in Judaic studies, and not only are they a small program, but they're a small program not everybody thinks should be a program, you know, the whole business, and they got to be a department very quickly and all. And when he was talking about this one course, and he said, well, he asked me a question that suggested that our whole program was just tendentious.
Mm.
And I thought, if our program's tendentious, what's yours? I mean, women have a history, Jews have a history, women have we had such parallel concerns and all, and for him to be the one to raise it, and to raise it in that kind of trivializing and questioning whether it was a real discipline way, when Judaic studies could come under the same kind of scrutiny, it just struck me as awful. So you never knew where your friends and enemies for sure were going to erupt.
Mm-hmm.
So that was part of the trick of the initial days. You never knew quite who to count on or how to judge people. Can I stop now for a moment?
And
well, what I was going to say was what you just reminded me of in our off-the-record conversation, was that there were a number of people like Liv Burns in the Counseling Center who came to meetings mm-hmm. pretty conscientiously and actually worked on committees and all, who were in either working with students in some capacity or another, or were, well, just simply weren't faculty, were in other mm-hmm. capacities like Ann
like
Robinson.
Like librarians.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Ann Robinson Library. Ann used to bring people around.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them, you know, did work and some didn't, and but they came to meetings and all. And remember Deborah just left a year ago, librarian.
Oh, Curry.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Deb Curry and all. So we always had a fair share of librarians and just in general people mm-hmm. who were not teaching faculty who were involved in did some of the mm-hmm. legwork and all for the groups, and that was always good. And Meredith, of course,
she
had a period where she
yeah.
where she did a lot of work mm-hmm. in the studies. But I came back with something in my mind, and I've lost it now, so I'm going to have to ask you something.
Let's see. Let me stop it for
a minute. Too much.
Right.
Well, I've already mentioned it. Judy just asked me off the record here about some of the early students. I've already mentioned Mel Mindell, who was one of our early students, who was in the first collective, along with, well, her name now is Ember Cariana, but at that time she was Ann Ragusa. Ann was not a women's studies major, but she had a minor in women's studies, but Ellen and Ember have both, excuse me, gone on to careers that are involved with the stuff they learned and very much stayed activist and strong feminists and so forth and so on. Ellen works in affirmative action. For a while she worked for the prison systems, but I don't believe she does that now. I think she works in some other agency mm-hmm. for the state, but she still works in an affirmative action capacity for the state. She worked for displaced homemakers for a while. Mm-hmm. In fact, she led displaced homemakers mm-hmm. in Albany County for a while. Some of our people who've been through the program were involved, not as the head of, but in part of the early Rape Crisis Center, which mm-hmm. I think that Capitalist Women was responsible for the Rape Crisis Center mm-hmm. being initiated in Albany in the first place, and some of the early workers there were our students who worked down there, and Ellen worked in Schenectady for their mm-hmm. Rape Crisis Center for a long time, so some of our students, or most of our students were early on and long-term activists mm-hmm. in the movement. And our first Women's Studies Collective was three people. One whose name is Janice something or other, whose name I can't remember, and I don't know whether she what she did. And now I'm going to draw a blank, because you mentioned Margaret Clemens and certainly Margaret, but I've drawn a blank on the next. Again, names are, but Robin. Well, anyway, there were a lot mm-hmm. of young women
right.
then. Ember is a homeopathic naturopathic doctor. Mm-hmm. And so is Robin, whose last name I can't mm-hmm. come up with right now. And other people who were very much involved with the program have remained connected with feminist activities. Many of them, I think, in terms of jobs, somebody like Arda Kriworka, went on to be, we got a lot of lawyers out of it. Susan, lost her name, Weber.
Oh,
Susie
yeah.
Weber went through Weber. The program, though she was not a women's studies major, mm-hmm. but she went through, mm-hmm. she did some work and she got a law degree. Mm-hmm. I think we got, as I say, a lot of lawyers out of it, and not all of them working in feminist areas, but certainly carried their feminist work in. I mean, Susan. Mm-hmm. Weber, for example, was very much involved with NARAL for a lot of years. I don't know that she is now. And a lot of the women who were involved with the Women's Studies program were very active in the initial attempts to have a women's building around different parts mm-hmm. of the city. I mean, we had a whole series of women's buildings
right.
around before this last one. And even some of the women who were involved in the one that came to be the women's building were much involved with the Women's Studies program. So I think we've had a lot of good success in women doing that kind of work, and certainly when you get down to more recent times, Bonnie knows a whole lot mm-hmm. of those students who've done some very interesting things like midwifery and all that. Mm-hmm. We're very involved, so.
When I started, when I became active in the Women's Studies program, we seemed to have more members from the community than
mm-hmm.
we do now.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. How did you go about drawing them in?
Well, I think, again, my feeling was, well, first of all, let me just say, that was a policy that was decided early on, that we wanted it to be not simply.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that came out of the student uprisings, the civil rights movement, the way in which all those things affected and influenced each other. So that was always part of a very distinct, and I called it a policy, though I don't know that it was ever written anywhere
mm-hmm.
as a policy, but it was certainly part of our initial idea about what this program should be, that it should be community-based as much as possible. And I think the way we drew them in, and you're quite right, some of those early meetings, that's why I think I can't think of so many faculty members, because I can think more of people like Martha Schultz and
mm-hmm.
other people like that who were not at all involved in any faculty
yeah.
stuff at SUNY, who came to all the meetings
mm-hmm.
very religiously. And I think a lot of that came from the fact that some of us who were very heavily involved in and invested in Capital District Women were some of the same people who started the Women's Studies program
mm-hmm.
here, so that there was that, well, who started the Caucus on Women's Rights here, so that there was heavy overlap between
mm-hmm.
those two groups, and so the lines were never all that clear. Someone like Andrea Lurie, for example, who had a degree in anthropology, who taught in our Perspectives on Women, who was a
mm-hmm.
lecturer many times, and a wonderful one, and our Perspectives on Women course was in Capital District Women, and at that time, now she's a lawyer, but then she was an anthropologist, and she didn't come to all that many meetings,
mm-hmm.
but certainly she made connections and got other people involved. So I think our roots in the community were through Capital District Women
mm-hmm.
as much as anything else.
Mm-hmm.
That plus a little left over from the fact that some of us were very involved with the student uprisings in the early 70s and the civil rights movement in locally.
Yeah.
So that we knew some people from the community through those things. Though I would have to admit, lest anybody listening to this tape get the wrong idea, we always had difficulty having a sufficient, sufficient is the wrong word, having any number of African-American women.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we had some at different times, but we never could get a kind of density
yeah.
that we wanted
right.
of people in the community involved with this. We would have little groups and then, you know, but never to our satisfaction in the sense that we wanted to make it
mm-hmm.
not just, you know, faculty, but educated white women grouping, so that was a real effort, and
mm-hmm.
I would say it didn't always work as nicely and easily as we'd like it.
Yeah.
But we were community-based. Now, you might want to ask me, when did that change? And it changed very, very clearly. Judith Romali, when she got to be vice president, wanted to look at our bylaws.
Mm-hmm.
So we typed them up in neat fashion and sent them on over, and she was horrified to find out that we had community people with no faculty. I mean, you have to understand, we didn't have any faculty that we were voting on
right.
personnel matters on or anything
yeah.
like that. But she was horrified to learn that community people had a vote,
yeah.
had just an equal vote, and that we made no distinction. We also made no distinction at that time between the way we do now with the core faculty
right.
and the joint faculty and
the
affiliate. You know, those lines were never drawn
yeah.
at that time. It was
mm-hmm.
really, in a sense, it was anybody who came to the meetings and said, I'm part of this
mm-hmm.
group, was able to have a vote on whatever decisions we made. Now, of course, that was when it was not just women's studies, though. What happened to Capital District, what happened to both Capital District Women, I think, and the caucus, was that when women's studies came along, it kind of took over everything else, really, after a little
mm-hmm.
while. The caucus kind of did a lot of good things, which also ought to be in somebody's record somewhere.
Right.
But after about 5 years, 6 years of work, it kind of dissipated to mm-hmm. some degree, so mm-hmm. that there was not that kind of involvement at the local level in that. So I think women's studies pretty much took over and mm-hmm. and drew in all the people who had been involved in the other parts of the Gap District Women and the Caucus program, because Gap District Women did a lot of work for 6 years, and then mm-hmm. it too just kind of, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. gradually ebbed away. that's a phrase.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think we picked up a lot of people through those mm-hmm. kinds of community mm-hmm. connections.
Maybe the Women's Center too had an impact. When the Women's Building was finally, they brought that on, because I know that people like Martha and Cheryl are active in the Women's Building.
Yeah, well, they were active with us first. And
I know that. I mean, but it's sort of...
Well, yeah, it does.
Yeah, I mean, it's a combination
yeah,
of things.
But I think Women's Studies, again, I don't think of this in any kind of aggrandizing way, but mm-hmm. I think it became kind of a focal point for a while because, as I said, those other groups did their work and then they just, you know,
yeah.
you lose right. a focus when
yeah.
you don't have
right.
certain specific tasks you really want to get taken mm-hmm. care of, and so I think both groups kind of lost their focus and pretty soon began to lose membership, and Women's Studies got to be the most active thing. I can remember some of the early meetings. We always had the meetings at night, and we always mm-hmm. had them here until some of the people complained about the night meetings and all. Well, that was years down the road.
Yeah.
But there would be 35 people at these meetings. Mm-hmm. We had them weekly, if you believe it, for a while, and they would mm-hmm. go on and on, and we would all get very upset that we were doing so much business that we'd never have time for the kind of feminist discussions we always wanted to have. We always were beating ourselves and each other over the head that we couldn't get to, you know, suddenly it'd be 10:30 and mm-hmm. we'd try to start on a topic of some kind or another, you know. And so, but it suggests that we had a lot of work to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then those meetings were just chock full of work. And of course, Ruth and Francine, well, in the early days, Ruth was still here. Ruth and Francine lived here, so they were absolutely central to mm-hmm. it and work. I mean, Ruth, even though she was still dean and working there, was still at almost all the meetings mm-hmm. and heavily involved with us. You know, so yeah, I think things fed each other.
Yeah.
But I do think for a while Women's Studies kind of, by dint of there being no other organized group at that moment that could do it, got a lot of attention from people like Martha Schultz and Cheryl mm-hmm. Reeves, who indeed Women's Studies was not their area, but it was a way of being around feminists and talking about feminist things and planning, you know, mm-hmm. feminist activities. Because I think at that time we kind of got, we did things like plan some of the summer activities around women's, mm-hmm. what's that day in August?
Oh.
You know,
I can think of Take Back the Night.
No, the Women's Suffrage Day.
Oh,
you know.
Yeah, that's right.
And Take Back the Night marches came out of
mm-hmm.
the Women's Studies program here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Initially, I think they got pretty soon the Great Crisis Center took over the major kind of effort on
yeah.
it. But
yeah, I remember getting involved in it when I was at the task force
yeah.
for Women's Safety.
Right. Yeah, and I think one of the very good things, of course, that we got somebody as good as Gloria in that job, she took over a lot. But she didn't take over in the sense that she sort of stole from us. But, you know, there were so many activities that Women's Studies tried to do in those early years that were not, strictly speaking,
mm-hmm.
academic involvements. And so that's partly why we retained a community base for a long time. But also it was very nice when someone like Gloria came along and took over some
mm-hmm.
of those things that
mm-hmm.
were... They were too big for a little group of handful of people that we actually were. If you wanted to count the faculty who were involved, you mean, you said how many? You know, you're asking all these people. I'm thinking I can see them in my hand. You know, one finger, two fingers, and so forth. You know, and so I think that was really, really a wonderful
mm-hmm.
appointment for Gloria to that job, because not only has she been terrific, but she's been extremely helpful in taking those little kernels of ideas we had and making them something that really is important, like
mm-hmm.
in the safety stuff.
what I'm saying.
Well, but what you're saying, women's studies was big because...
Well, I think it was big, and I was saying to Judy when the tape was off that it's hard not to sound aggrandizing, you know, in terms of women's studies, as though trying to make a big deal out of it, but it was big because of the slowing down of activities on the part of other groups, and because it was so exciting at that time, and we had so many offshoots of things we wanted to make sure we did, and make women's studies a community thing and not just an academic thing, you know, so that the idea of studies as programs at the women's centers around the community, or programs for displaced homemakers or something like that. It was a very broad conception of women's studies, and it was very vital, and a lot of women, as I said before in this tape, who were involved in one thing kept involved in women's studies because we had maybe too grand a vision, but we certainly had grand ideas and grand visions about mm-hmm. how much we wanted to make that just go everywhere. And so it was mm-hmm. big and vital for a while, and it's hard to say that, but it was, you know, it was the show in town at the mm-hmm. time for mm-hmm. a long time, I think. Well, for some years at least. In case people want to mention it, that we had some connections with a few people from other colleges, and one that I think of right away is Elaine Onyebeni mm-hmm. at Siena, mm-hmm. who was always a good and loyal person, and the way in which we, more than through women's studies, though I think they got some ideas from our program for their own mm-hmm. working out of women's studies, but I think at that time it was through the Hudson Valley Consortium that some of us who were in women's studies at different places came together, and of course mm-hmm. Somebody like Susan Kress at Skidmore, and of course Glory was at Skidmore right. for a while, so that some of the, I wouldn't say Susan Kress was a feminist because she knew us here, but certainly there was always that kind of cross-fertilization mm-hmm. With mm-hmm. Skidmore.
And Kathy Ferguson,
absolutely, mm-hmm. yeah. Through, Linda Nicholson, somebody who was early on.
Right.
Who I think Linda got brought in by Sandra Harding. Now there's...
Really?
There's, I think, maybe the first, because I certainly met Linda at Sandra Harding's house, mm-hmm. and I think Sandra was the one. Sandra, at that time, as I said, Capital District Women was still... It had a couple years left in mm-hmm. it at that moment, but Sandra brought people from everywhere, as did Ann Roberts and Sandra could all. I could never find any people that I never knew how to say to somebody, do you want to come to a, you know, that kind of meeting. But Sandra and Ann were, you know, Ann was always dragging around people. Anyway,
it's great. Yeah.